AB less. If you want, the car is outside. Gangsters, let's try.
This is a gangsta party. We came to smoke in this party. Let's get it crunk in this party. We came to drink in this party. What's up for after this party? We came to leave with some money.
How about your team meet up with my team? And I'ma show y'all how gangsters lean.
Come with me. Let me know if you smoke that. Do we have here now? If you puff la la la, I mean look baby, I'm a thug and a gentleman. So I'll buy you a Corona and at the same time try to bone ya. I won't stalk you, keep trying to bone ya. Out past the out, get as high as you roll up.
With these lames, cause they messy. Go back, go back, go bestie. Can't mess with these lames, cause they messy. Go bestie. Them mom, best friend, bestie. Them mom, best friend, bestie. Them mom, best friend. Them my what? Them mom, best friend.
Hey, shawty, she gon' ride, she gon' die for me. Yeah, I know all my they gon' snipe for me. I be going up when you going down on me. When I come through, I got the 4 pound on me. Every time I'm on the scene, I be tooling up. When you coming through, I see to put your jewelry up. In a dually truck, doodle got his dually tuck. I love my baby, you can't talk to her, she rude as fuck. Go, call that, get money.
Fire man with what I told you still. The way you move, girl, you're winning up. Challenge, killing me like your game. Mad avenge, good girl, but you wanna do a bad again. I won't forgive you if you put me on snap again.
Big banks, I'ma run through a quarter mil. I made bread, I've been eating, that's before a deal. Everybody loving us, cause we keep it real. Big batty things that they ain't coming from Brazil. Hitting Paris for the day, ain't got no whole baggage. A little wanna hang, cause we live a lavish. I'm a boss, there ain't many men that can manage. Flex on them, gotta show them you the whole package. In my gym bag, for the wardrobe, I'm gonna need 10 bags. Used to stack shots, now I made big racks. Big banks on the track, that's big facts. No man, just vibes. Made me feel alive when you're live inside. And you got that good, like he was J5. When you're something rise, I ain't gonna improvise. How you gonna survive when you feel this tired?
Oi, oi. Get crazy, I might spend a quarter mil. Journey long, I might pop one. Told her I won't miss a bus, so will. Don't satisfy a man with what I told you still. The way you move, girl, you're winning now. Challenge, keep killing me like you're getting mad avenge. Good girl, but you wanna do a bad again. I won't forgive you if you put me on snap again. Boss, you know, whole scene stay down. Money kid that was wearing Gucci in playground. Yep, you was cool, but you're old and you're lame now. I love your lady, ass up and her face down. 16, bought me the bus down. Car, you know, from me to a wash down. Your girl lost and she gotta be saved. You want me, girl, you gotta be, 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 gotta be. When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Welcome, everybody. Most of you know, if you know me, if you know my show, you know I don't care about political party. Yes, I'm on the left, and right now that means I mostly vote for candidates who happen to be Democrats. But I see political parties, aside from their general platform and views on issues, really as organisms or entities that seek to justify and perpetuate their own existence. They're not that different from corporations in a lot of ways. So I don't care about defending Democrats when they do bad things. I just call things the way I see them. And today I have to call out Joe Biden's White House press secretary, Jen Psaki. And every time I do this, even though people often write to me and say, David, I like that even though you're on the left, you just tell it to us like it is as you see it. When what I happen to see is someone on the left not behaving correctly, sometimes people get mad and say, David, you shouldn't be talking about this. Well, listen, Jen Psaki does some things well, and she does other things not so well. And early on in her press secretaryship, when she would be unprepared for a question, I would say it. And then the next time she'd be prepared, and I would say she was better prepared this time. And here is something that's really not good. A few days ago, Jen Psaki was asked about, what about like maybe sending COVID tests to people's homes, you know, to stop the spread? The tests are not widely available as much as we would like. They're expensive in many ways. What about sending people tests? And she kind of laughed it off scornfully by saying, what, so we're just going to start sending people free tests? So let's look at that video from a few days ago.
Look at what we've done over the course of time. We've quadrupled the size of our testing plan. We've cut the cost significantly over the past few months. And this effort to ensure insurers are you're able to get your tests refunded means 150 million Americans will be able to get free tests.
Complicated though. Why not just make them free and give them out to and have them available everywhere?
Should we just send one to every American?
Maybe.
Then what happens if every American has one test? How much does that cost? And then what happens after that?
All I know is that other countries seem to be making them available for in greater quantities for less money.
Well, I think we share the same objective, which is to make them less expensive and more accessible, right? Every country is going to do that differently. And I was just noting that, again, our tests go through the FDA approval process.
It is absolutely true that the United States has failed on making at-home tests cheap and accessible and getting them into people's hands. And the answer is yes. Send everybody tests. Wow, that would be an amazing thing to do. Consider what the savings would be, given how expensive it is on average for people to be hospitalized for COVID. Think about the savings. Now, I don't mean necessarily send them to people who haven't even asked for them. There's no doubt that in the U.S. with the environment that we have, there are people who would receive the tests and put them in the trash. So I'm not saying just mail them out willy-nilly, but set up a website to send people free tests and send them out when people request them. But she's right about one part. If we send each person one test, what is that really going to do? That's true, which is why we should actually make it easy for people to sign up and give them 5 tests, give them 10 tests. This is how you get people who are exposed regularly to identify cases early and get them staying home. My sister right now has COVID. She's in high school. Why did she end up with it? Well, part of it is there was a slow process for getting the classmate, who is believed to have been the spreader, tested and to report the results of that test. So it's a great idea, actually. So a few days go by, and then Jen Psaki gets another shot at the same question. And she does take a different approach. Good for her. She seems to recognize that first answer was a botched answer. The problem is she ends up reading a pre-written answer, which is a lot of words with very little meaning. Take a look at her next answer to the question.
Is the White House's position on this simply a cost analysis, or are there other reasons why the administration doesn't think that sending tests, COVID-19 tests, to all Americans is a good strategy?
Well, let me give you an overarching, comprehensive understanding of how we're approaching this to give you a sense, and I appreciate the question. So in February, we wrote new guidance to make insurers cover asymptomatic PCR and point-of-care tests, critical to helping the majority of Americans who have private insurance not worry about burdensome test costs. We quadrupled the number of free pharmacy testing sites with a priority on vulnerable communities. And we've also secured funding from the rescue plan, invested in hardest hit areas, $10 billion for schools to conduct testing, nearly $1 billion for rural clinics and hospitals. And toward the summer, we also planned for the school year, ensuring school districts had the resources to set up a testing program to ensure kids stayed in school. We also doubled down our work to get tests to congregate settings that were more vulnerable and where demand was higher. And as we've seen at home tests become more in demand, we've taken steps on that front to make them free. So if you have private insurance, we're making sure you'll get reimbursed by your insurer for at-home tests.
All right, so you get the idea. There's like another minute, but I'm not going to play it all for you because it's this pre-written, not very substantive answer. And it became, since we aren't going to send people free tests, I'm going to read a bunch of stuff for you that we've done, which doesn't include free tests and is not going to include free tests. There are places that are doing the free testing thing. Monroe County, New York is doing it to some degree. In Colorado, I believe if you have kids in school, there's a way to get free tests. In Seattle, there's a test delivery system. And of course, in other countries, look at what's happening in the UK in terms of people's ability to get free tests. So the good part is eventually Jen Psaki figured out that first answer was no good. Scornfully laughing off, what, we're just going to send people free tests? Yes, that was not good. So she changed her attitude, but she then came back with, you know, something that clearly is not thinking nearly big enough and a sort of pre-written answer communicating very, very little. One of the ways that we can normalize more to what we had before the pandemic, which the right wants to do, and at least the Biden administration wants to be able to do in order to help the economy and so on and so forth, it's make sure that we can easily figure out who has COVID. And free testing would be a major, major piece of that. It's funny because her new answer, the pre-written 2-minute answer that I played 1 minute of for you, it is better in that it's less offensive, it's less free tests, get the hell out of here. It's less of that, but it doesn't actually get us anywhere closer to just sending people free tests, which is abundantly clear they have no interest in or intention of doing. So she was prepared because she knew that first answer was no good, but it doesn't seem like they're going to do the free tests, guys. And this is one of the differences in a lot of other countries, the accessibility and the low or no cost testing options that are there. Okay, so it's happening again. It happened to Marjorie Taylor Greene. and it is now potentially going to happen to Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. We have seen numerous videos uncovered in which Lauren Boebert implies or alludes to Muslim member of Congress Ilhan Omar being a terrorist, wearing backpack bombs, refers to the squad as the Jihad Squad, and is generally a gross person. As a result, some Democrats are now moving to strip Lauren Boebert of all of her committee assignments. Is this a good idea? We're going to talk about it. First, let's look at examples of what Lauren Boebert has been saying. I'm going to play three of them here for you. She has told a very similar story a few times. Here are a few of those versions of the story.
Now, I've had a little bit of fun in Congress. No, I haven't gone toe-to-toe with AOC. She doesn't show up to work. Sorry, she votes by proxy. I did see Ilhan Omar the other day, and I said, oh, cute. The Jihad Squad decided to come in for work.
One of my staffers, on his first day with me, got into an elevator in the Capitol. And in that elevator, we were joined by Ilhan Omar. Well, it was just us three in there, and I looked over and I said, well, look at there, it's the Jihad Squad. Yeah.
Actually, I have an Ilhan story for you. So, the other night on the House floor was not my first Jihad Squad moment. So, I was getting into an elevator with one of my staffers, and he and I were leaving the Capitol. We're going back to my office, and we get in the elevator, and I see a Capitol police officer running hurriedly to the elevator. I see fret all over his face. And he's reaching, and I'm like, what? I can't, the door's shutting. Like, I can't open it. Like, what's happening? I look to my left, and there she is, Ilhan Omar. Whoops. And I said, well, she doesn't have a backpack. We should be fine.
So this is very vile stuff. And as a result, Massachusetts Democratic Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley is moving to have Lauren Boebert removed from every single committee on which she sits. Pressley announced her resolution yesterday morning. Let's take a look at that clip.
We have heard the hate and credible threats that have been directed at Rep. Omar and her staff. Words have consequences. We must acknowledge that and respond with action. We've introduced this resolution today to do just that and to send a powerful message to every Muslim and every marginalized person who has ever questioned their place in this country or in the halls of power. We see you. You belong, you are powerful, and you deserve a life free from fear and filled with dignity and love. How we respond in moments like these will have a lasting impact, and history will remember us for it.
Now, I have two views on this, and I do want to hear from you about it. On the merits, if you just say, does this woman, Lauren Boebert, deserve to be on any committees? The answer is, of course not. Of course not. On the merits, she shouldn't be on a single committee. She shouldn't be in Congress. I wouldn't trust her to mow my lawn or run antivirus software on my computer. You know, I don't want to minimize any job. But what I'm saying is, even simple jobs, she has no business. I wouldn't want her doing anything. Oh, David, sir, are you saying she shouldn't earn a living? Guys, let's take it easy, okay? She's incompetent. Her presence in the House of Representatives as a legislative body is a disgrace. But to some degree, is it kind of a Pyrrhic victory when Democrats do this to these very much deserving of it being done to them Republican? They did it to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now they're looking very strongly at doing it to Lauren Boebert. Well, what do I mean, a Pyrrhic victory? A Pyrrhic victory is a victory which, in so achieving the victory, you do damage to yourself, where at the end of the day you say, I won, but did I really win? Did I really come out ahead? And what I mean by that is the following. Republicans are not in the majority right now, regardless. So Democrats still control the committees. You are stripping them, whoever it is, Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, you're stripping them of their committee assignments. You allow them to claim victim status. You allow them to martyr themselves, and they immediately start raising money on it. I've been canceled, and so on and so forth. And I want to say it again so that people don't misunderstand. It's not wrong to remove them. It's right. Boebert has no business being involved in anything in Washington, D.C. But what I'm wondering is, what is truly accomplished? For example, Marjorie Taylor Greene, within hours of being stripped of her committee assignments, she was fundraising. She was sending out fundraising emails saying, they've canceled me. Donate in order to help me do whatever. I don't even know what the argument was, but it was, they've canceled me and give me money. So I'm not arguing that it's the wrong move. It's the right move on the merits. But what I'm wondering is whether we end up helping Republicans more than hurting them when we do this to them, because they go to, I've been canceled, and I told you that Democrats cancel people, and now you've got to help me get uncanceled. For Boebert, it's almost a dream scenario. Less work. She gets talked about in right-wing media. It gives her something to fundraise on. So what really needs to happen is she's removed from Congress. That's a much tougher and certainly much longer uphill battle. So let me know what you think. Net benefit or not, when these folks are removed from their committee assignments. Remember also, Tuesday, December 14th, 6 p.m. Eastern, will be the next David Pakman Show viewer town hall. It will be the last town hall of the year. I hope you'll join us. It'll be streaming live on the Pakman Live YouTube channel. That's the second channel. Very much looking forward to it. I want to take a second just to thank everybody who has signed up on our website this week. I told you at the start of the week, it's been a tougher few months as far as membership goes. And we had this idea. Anybody who signs up for a full price yearly membership will send you a free t-shirt if you would like it. And a bunch of people have taken advantage of it. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. Very easy to do. You can use a coupon code. You can get a monthly membership, a yearly membership. The coupon code is better21. If you would like a free t-shirt with your membership, you got to do a year and full price, the $60. We're trying to raise money, not lose money. And if you do that, you can email info@davidpakman.com after signing up. Just let us know your mailing address and the t-shirt style, size, and color that you would like. Three important details. And we will get that right out to you free with your full price yearly membership, or get a discounted monthly, $2 a month. Very, very good deal, guys. JoinPakman.com. Really appreciate everybody's support. We have a David Pakman Show subreddit, which you could find at davidpakman.com/reddit. A nearly 34,000 of our viewers and listeners have signed up so far. Some interesting posts I spotted this morning that I want to take a look at with you. First is about Putin, Trump, and Russia. And it says, Putin poised to invade Ukraine. Trump probably gnashing at the bit so he can point his demonic finger at Biden's failure to prevent. Putin would love this support from his wannabe fellow tyrant. Yeah, there's going to be this amazing double standard that takes place. Maybe not from, I mean, Trump will say something, but who cares, right? But from people on the right, where all along during the Trump administration, they said, hey, guys, we want to be friends with Russia. Why you want to go to war? War is bad now. We now pretend not to like war. Let's all get along. Putin's nice. Putin's good. All this different stuff. And then if Putin does invade Ukraine, those very same people will say, why wasn't Biden tougher? Why is Biden beta? Why is Biden weak? It's going to be an amazing double standard. And I would say I look forward to it, but it's actually horrifying, quite frankly. But yeah, we're going to be watching the reaction from the right, including Trump, about what ultimately happens there. Next post I spotted, which was interesting. Hey, David, do you think it's likely Sinema and Manchin are being blackmailed? Wouldn't put it past a significant percentage of the Republican Party who has proven themselves to be willing to do anything to subvert Biden, to blackmail two members of the Democrats in order to stop meaningful legislation from passing. You know, that's not typically the way things work in the Senate. Usually in the Senate, they don't use blackmail, which is more of like the stick. They use the carrot, which is, here's the stuff we'll give you if you do or don't go along with this or whatever the case may be. And that's more frequently the way that the way that it works, rather than here's what we're going to do to you if you do the wrong thing. It's here's what we'll give you if you do the right thing. And of course, you could say these are legalized bribes. It's a form of bribe. So blackmail, I think, less likely. Goodies, as Donald Trump liked to say, more probable. Another user posted an article about a Let's Go Brandon store that opened in the state of, or the Commonwealth, as Donald Trump likes to say, of Massachusetts. I don't know too much about right-wing memes. I know that Let's Go Brandon is a big one right now. This can't possibly last too much longer, can it? Like, I already feel like, you know, the way I gauge what the right is obsessed with is what kind of gutter trash my live stream, live chat is filled with. And a few weeks ago, it was filled with people just posting Let's Go Brandon over and over again in all caps. And of course, we were banning every single one of them. And we're seeing a lot less of it right now in the comments in general. So it feels as though Let's Go Brandon is already kind of dying down. But if it's not, it's such a lame meme that I can't imagine it would last too much longer. And I think if you're just now opening up the Let's Go Brandon store, it doesn't seem like particularly auspicious timing. That's my instinct. But let me know if it's going to have staying power, as the case may be. Join the discussion on the subreddit davidpakman.com/REDDIT. So we've already done an expose of Fox News's hypocrisy on vaccine requirements. On air, we've got the Fox hosts, in particular Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, Hannity entertaining this stuff as well, the daytime shows, Dan Bongino, you know, the whole crew. They've been softly and sometimes not so softly pushing against vaccines, promoting unproven treatments and cures, certainly against the vaccine requirement, very aggressively against them. And yet, behind the scenes, we learned that Fox News has an even stricter vaccination policy than the one that Joe Biden proposed. You've got to not only be vaccinated, but if you aren't, you've got to be testing daily rather than weekly, and you've got to be wearing a mask. Okay, we talked about it already. We know about the Fox News hypocrisy. But what about Newsmax? Because Newsmax, the even further right network, has been completely off the rails in an even wackier way than Fox News on vaccines, COVID, and COVID-related conspiracies. And it turns out that this week, Newsmax had a holiday party in New York City. And yes, everyone had to present proof of vaccination in order to attend. A negative test alone would not suffice. You must show your vaccination card or a picture of your vaccination card. Here's the notice that Newsmax sent out, which says, reminder on Newsmax holiday reception, city regulations require that you show a vaccination card. A COVID test alone is not sufficient. Now, Newsmax made completely clear that as a company, they have no vaccine requirement whatsoever. This is a requirement for this particular holiday party because it's in New York City and these are New York City rules. But wouldn't you think that if this goes against their principles, if they are so opposed to any such requirements, wouldn't they put their money where their mouth is and stand in defiant opposition? Have the party in some other state, have the party at a private residence, find some way around it. Like, it doesn't seem like it would be that hard, right? Now, in their defense, and, you know, I have no interest in, I want to encourage good behavior, not just call out bad behavior. Newsmax has parted ways with a couple of the wackier anti-vax people that they've had on air. There's this guy, Steve Cortes, former Trump advisor. he recently left the network as a primetime host, for example, and he was very publicly against Newsmax vaccine rules, and sources told the Daily Beast that it was because of that loud opposition to his employer's own rules. It was sort of the last straw. Steve Cortez and Newsmax parted ways. We talked 3 weeks ago, maybe it was more like 4 or 5 weeks ago. The White House correspondent, Emerald Robinson from Newsmax, she was in bonkers Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs land tweeting about bioluminescent tracking devices in the vaccine. And what else was she talking about? Luciferase and did she talk about a black light? I don't even remember. Anyway, she is not coming back to the network after her completely off the wall claims about the vaccine. So good for Newsmax as far as that goes. I've actually had a couple of very polite exchanges with some higher ups at Newsmax. They're not obviously crazy. It does seem like it's for money, meaning it's sort of a grifty thing that Newsmax is operating. Maybe I'll say more about that in the future. I don't want to sort of out anybody there. But Newsmax clearly not standing in opposition strongly enough to vaccine requirements to say, we are going to a private residence, or we'll do it in, I don't know what the rules are in New Jersey, but maybe we'll do it over the river in New Jersey or somewhere else. They are just going with the rules. And it is not a shock given what we've seen Fox News do and all of these other complete and total hypocrites. Let me know your thoughts about that. We'll have more coverage of this on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. We will take a quick break. A lot of exciting things coming up on the program in mere moments. It's great to welcome back to the program today Congressman Ro Khanna, representing California's 17th District, which includes Silicon Valley, joining us today from a car. Very much great to have you back on.
David, a parked car, always.
Of course, always safe
to be on.
So, okay, supply chain shortages, gas prices, tchotchkes from China that are expected to be Christmas gifts. You know, there's this broad range of what does milk cost, what do toys cost, et cetera. Initially, right, there was the idea that this is a demand resurgence after there was a demand evaporation during the pandemic. It's now pretty clear that it's more than that. But what's your kind of general assessment of what we're seeing right now?
Well, we're seeing inflation, and this is why we need two things. We need to pass Build Back Better, which would put more money in the pockets of working families so that they could pay for their groceries and gas. It would lower prescription drug prices. It would deal with some of the supply chain issues by investing money in our ports, by providing an incentive for people to return to work. And so we need to pass it. And then the Fed, you know, as Larry Summers has said, the Fed needs to make sure that they stop, in my view, the mortgage buybacks and stop increasing the money supply. That's largely on the Fed, and they can take that action.
Let's pick one item, which is gas prices, because it gets so much attention. You know, for years, I have not participated in the you either blame or praise the president for what's going on with gas prices. I mean, my best assessment is if a president wants, they can tap into the strategic reserve, which will eventually lower gas prices, maybe 18 to 20 cents a gallon on what might be a temporary basis. I mean, it seems really that presidents don't have very much to do with gas prices, but yet it's a very popular political football to throw around, isn't it?
Well, this president, I think, did the right thing by tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. 18 cents per gallon is significant. I mean, that means a lot to folks who are struggling. But in terms of dramatically lowering prices, it has more to do with the oil companies. I mean, they didn't, when oil was 22, 30 bucks a barrel, they didn't invest. Now that it's much higher, they want to reap the benefits. And so the long-term solution to this is price stability, which is more electric vehicles, more renewable energy, so that we're not at the mercy of the vagaries of the price of oil. But in the short term, I think President Biden's taking the right action.
When we look at some other things, like, for example, used cars have been a big area of price increase starting with the pandemic and continuing through. Building materials is another one, although it seems that lumber is sort of coming back down. How involved do you believe a government should be on individual areas like these in trying to influence price?
As involved as we can be. I mean, we have to be realistic that the governments usually don't have that many tools to fight inflation. I mean, it goes back to Gerald Ford with WIN and whip inflation. And, you know, it's very hard to do, but we should do what we can. In this case, I think the three things we need to do is put more money in the pockets of working families so that they have money to deal with the higher prices, make sure we're dealing with supply chain issues at the ports, and make sure we're incentivizing more people to work so that you can deal with some of these supply issues and lower prices. I guess I'd add one more thing, which is if there's concentrated industry, making sure people aren't charging prices above the competitive price and putting pressure on those industries to charge a fair price.
There's, I guess we would call it plausible, maybe we don't have to say probable yet, that Republicans may well take control of the House of Representatives back next year and would assume control in January of 2023. Given that we don't know, at least, what will happen after next November, what do you believe realistically can get done in terms of major legislation in the next year that would pass not only the House, but actually the Senate and become law?
Well, first of all, we need to make sure we win, or it's devastating for our democracy. I mean, to have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others in charge of the House of Representatives is a fate that really no one, in my view, in the Democratic side should want and should take very seriously. I think we have to, obviously, we have to pass Build Back Better, which will lower prescription drug costs, lower child care costs, lower elder care costs. We need to, in my view, deliver on the $15 minimum wage. The president can unilaterally forgive student loans. He ought to do that, have some forgiveness of student loans. Voting rights, we have to deliver voting rights. This is our chance to do it, or we're basically stuck with state voter suppression laws. And we need to make sure that we're tackling immigration. I mean, if it doesn't make it into Build Back Better, there has to be some delivering on immigration. So those would be some of the things I think that are the priorities for next year.
On student loans, I get a lot of emails from people who say, I'm really mad that Joe Biden is not moving more quickly on forgiving some student loan debt. I came into this presidency not believing that Joe Biden had any intention of doing that. I'm not praising or saying I'm mad at him. I just never thought that this was a priority for Joe Biden. I didn't think he was going to forgive any student debt. Is that your view, or do you think that that's something he might be able to be pressured to do?
I think he should be persuaded to do it. I think it can help really build support with young people around the country, and it's the right thing to do. And he understands that we're being married to the First Lady, who is an educator, how much debt we're saddling the younger generation with. Now, I don't think he's going to do 50,000 as Senator Warren, Senator Schumer, and I and others have asked. But could he do 10, 20,000? And would that materially make a difference in people's lives? Absolutely. And I think it would be one of the biggest things he could do to build momentum for his presidency.
You mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene. As some in my audience know, the House voted to strip her of her committee assignments some months ago. Your colleague, Ayanna Pressley, has now proposed doing the same with Lauren Boebert over her multiple recent videos related to stories about being in elevators with Ilhan Omar and the Jihad Squad, etc. What's your view about doing that? Because it's obviously correct on the merits, and I would go further that these folks have no business even being in the House of Representatives. But is it not a Pyrrhic victory in some sense where they end up saying, I've been canceled, donate money, and it gives them attention?
Well, David, you're actually right. I was talking to a friend of mine on the Republican side yesterday, and he said, when are you going to kick me off my committee so I can go raise $1 million? I got an email to my list. So this is why I think the speaker is being judicious about this, discussing it. Obviously, we have to take action. It has to be clear that that kind of racism, that kind of Islamophobia has no place. But we don't want to make Representative Boebert a martyr and do something that's going to further fuel her platform. And that's why I think the speaker's taking her time consulting the caucus. I will support whatever action she ends up taking. We do need to take some action.
Sometimes we learn that there are interesting political bedfellows behind the scenes where publicly there's a lot of conflict and they're friends behind the scenes. Right now, with some of these personalities that exist, for example, this rift between Congresswoman Boebert and Ilhan Omar, is there more palpable tension behind the scenes where it is not nearly as collegial as it tends to be?
I think on some of the fringes, yes. There are a few people who probably you don't interact with, you don't even sometimes say hi to, but not among the vast majority. I mean, I still have good relations on the other side. I speak often to Representative Comer. We disagree strongly on issues of oil and gas, other issues, but he's always engages in good faith. There are, you know, dozens of members on the other side who I still work with. You have to get legislation through.
I want to talk a little bit about the general approach that you think the Democratic Party should take going into the 2022 election. One of the things that makes it increasingly tough to run against the kind of modern Republicans of the Trump and post-Trump era is, for the most part, they're not even pretending to be about policy anymore. They're about obstruction. They're about cultural issues like critical race theory or a Christmas tree was burned and it's part of the war on Christmas or whatever the case may be. So that's very silly, but it also makes it sort of tough to run against them, because if they're not arguing on policy, it's hard to fight against things like the left wants to turn this country into a socialist country or these kind of vague statements. So how do you run against that? I'm not convinced that just continuing to talk about policy like a train it actually is what's effective.
Well, we lead with patriotism. We talk about how we have an aspirational vision for America. We have a vision of an America where we actually win the 21st century. We're proud of being Americans. Everyone should be taught to be proud of being Americans. And what we want to make sure is people shouldn't have to be forced to leave their hometowns. We need to bring prosperity and modern opportunity to places that have long been left out so that they can have dignity, so they can stay, kids can stay with their families. And that, you know, Trump promised all these things, but he hasn't delivered. And we will to build a strong, vibrant, great America. I think we don't emphasize the patriotism enough, the aspiration enough. You have to get to people's hearts to get them to think, yeah, they really have a vision that they care about this country. They care about my community. And then you can get into the specifics. But you can't lead with the specifics without what is the end? What is the purpose? Human beings aren't just economic actors.
Yeah, that's what seems extraordinarily difficult about the situation, which is I feel very strongly that when there is a policy debate, we win the policy debate very clearly. But if the circumstances don't allow you to be speaking to a public that is expecting to have the policy debate, and instead they want the debate over who is socialist or patriotic or whatever the case may be, it feels like a losing battle in some sense.
Well, we can win that debate, that our values are the true American values, our values of the freedom of ideas and expression, of a respect for people of all faiths, of a respect for a community, of a civility, a decency. These are the American values that we're standing up for, and the fulfillment of those values and of spreading opportunity and prosperity. I think we ought to frame them as we're standing up for the deepest American values, the fundamental American values, and not that we're here's our 5-point plan just to put more money in your pocket. That matters. But people care holistically. They want to see our nation thrive and succeed, and they want to know what their place is in this nation. And we have to speak to that deeper aspiration that people have, and people are very much vote on identity.
Before I let you go, I'm curious now, in thinking about 2022, of course, every member of the House is up for re-election, many in very safe seats. So the number of truly contested seats is, of course, only a fraction of the total. One third of the Senate is, of course, up. There's a number of governor's races, etc. How much talk behind the scenes is there about the role that the former president, Donald Trump, is going to try to play either in general in the midterms or in specific races? And does it really matter in terms of the strategy for Democrats?
I do think he's going to play a role. He's already playing a role in Georgia, challenging an incumbent governor. He's challenging some sitting House members. I think it provides an opportunity for Democrats to, when the Republican Party is so divided and they're still having people who are denying Joe Biden's legitimate election running for office on that platform. But I don't think it's sufficient for Democrats. I think it gives us an opportunity to compete, to not be written off, to maintain our majority. But we have to have a vision that delivers for people and that convinces them that we really are speaking to what matters to them, and matters to them not just economically, matters to their conception of our country. And only if we do that can we keep the House.
Do you think the Virginia gubernatorial from last month was a warning about making it too much about running against Trumpism? Because Youngkin seemed to kind of ride the fence well enough that it was not a good strategy.
Yeah, I don't think it should be all about Trump. I think it could be also about some of the extremes in Congress who basically said, look, do you want some of these people to be chairing the next committees and to be in charge of the new Congress? But then I think it has to be a clear vision on our side of what we have delivered and what we're going to continue to deliver, what we stand for. People ultimately need the positive, the affirmative to vote for someone.
Yeah, the more I look at next year, the more I'm of the mindset of hope for the best and prepare for the worst. And hopefully it works out not too poorly. Congressman Ro Khanna, representing California's 17th district. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you, David. I always enjoy being on.
Many of Donald Trump's recent interviews are so short form, where he gets such little time to really flesh out his bonkers answers. There's just sort of less of an opportunity for him to hang himself with his own rope. And don't get me wrong, like, he still looks like a fool. If you look at that recent interview he did with Mark Levin, he did admit to crimes, specifically obstruction, during the interview, completely unprovoked. So he's not coming off like an angel in those interviews. But I have a new interview from this week that's a little bit different, where Trump was allowed to sort of go longer, maybe less constrained because it was on Newsmax than by the sort of fast-paced nature of the Fox News interview. You might know that Sean Spicer, one of Donald Trump's former press secretaries, now has a show on Newsmax. And Trump appeared on that show, and he got an opportunity to answer different types of questions. And not only is he sort of slurring up a storm and sounding disoriented, as often is the case, he's making no sense in terms of the substance either and telling countless lies, but lies that are important. Why? Because they signal Trump's plan for 2022 and maybe even for 2024 in terms of Republican strategy and in terms of his involvement. So let's look at the first clip. The topic of Trump's social media company, Truth Social, comes up. We talked on the bonus show earlier this week. Donald Trump hired Republican Congressman from California, Devin Nunes, to run it. Devin Nunes is going to be resigning from Congress in order to run Trump's social media company. And immediately, Trump is bomb throwing when asked about the fact that there's an ethics investigation into Devin Nunes. Of course, there's ethics investigations into many members of Congress, some Republicans, some Democrats. There's nothing particularly pernicious about this one, but immediately Trump is bomb throwing. Take a look at this.
Apparently, according to other reports, he's already looking at that company. So can you comment on Devin Nunes' role and the SEC?
Well, I don't know anything about the SEC. I do know that Devin is fantastic, and I guess we just put out a release, and the release says that he'll be coming on. And, you know, this is just a continuation of witch hunts. Anything you do, they want to look at it. They look at it. They don't look at themselves. They don't look at Hunter. They don't look at anybody. All they do is look at Republicans. Devin is a fantastic guy. I think that he will do an incredible job. If our side doesn't have a voice, eventually you're going to end up with pure communism. It's a disgrace what's going on, but you're going to end up with a communist nation. And so, Devin, we just put out the release on Devin. We're very proud of that. We're proud of him. And I think it's got a chance of being a very important day, actually. I think it's going to be a very important day.
Always a victim. Devin Nunes is a victim. The right are victims of the social media left wing. everybody's communists, on and on and on. Now, hilariously, this entire interview, as are many of the ones Trump has been doing lately, are supposedly to promote Trump's book. The thing about Trump's book is that it's a picture book, which is just amazing. And in this next clip I'm going to play for you, they have to suck up to Trump. They always do. And Sean Spicer sucks up to Trump by saying, "We understand you wrote all of the captions for the book." Because remember, it's a picture book. Most presidents writing books, Trump instead publishing a picture book in which he writes the captions. It's beyond parody, but the topic is Trump's opinion of what Mike Pence did on January 6th. Take a look.
Sure.
You know, Mr. President, in the book, there's a picture of you with Vice President Pence, and you talk about the caption that you wrote, and I understand you wrote all the captions on these photos, says that you got along great except on one issue. Vice President Pence on Thursday said that he did the right thing on January 6th. In your mind, did he do the right thing, and is that obviously the one thing that you didn't agree with him on?
Totally, and he didn't do the right thing, and he's a person who's a good person. He didn't have the – he didn't do whatever it is that you might say he should have done, because – and I think you agree with me, and a lot of people agree with me. If you see that the election was fraudulent, if you see that there are more votes than there are voters, if you see many of the things that went along, and they're coming out on a weekly basis more and more and more, and you'll be seeing more come out. It's not me. It's states now. Look at what's going on in Pennsylvania. They're sending subpoenas to many people. And now the federal government will try and stop that because they don't want that to happen. They got away with something that is, in my opinion, the crime of the century. And instead of going after Antifa and BLM and all these people that killed a lot of people and burned down our cities, and what they did, the destruction, they're going after people that were protesting the election. The election was the insurrection. The November 3rd date was the insurrection. The January 6th date was not the insurrection. That was the protest.
This is really stunning stuff. Trump is still saying it was Pence's choice not to do what he could have done to steal the election from the guy who really won it. And as we've heard from numerous legal scholars, Pence could not have done anything to steal it. Pence realized he couldn't steal the election, and he wasn't going to make any kind of buffoonish attempt to try. And that was the right perspective. Pence sought legal counsel on that, and the legal advice was very, very much sound. The other notable thing about this is that Trump has stopped even pretending that the violence on January 6th was bad or that it was carried out by his supporters. He wants to play it both ways. Trump's new story, which he seems to be sticking with, is the insurrection was the November election. I really won, and they did an insurrection, and they stole it, and it led to Joe Biden being declared the winner. That was the insurrection, per Trump. January 6th, on the other hand, that was a protest. It was a logical protest because the election was stolen. It was a peaceful protest by my supporters, Trump supporters. But any violence that there was Black Lives Matter, and it was Antifa, of course, a claim for which there is absolutely no evidence. And despite that, it is Trump's supporters that are being treated poorly. That's not only an inaccurate revision of history, it's a very dangerous one. Because if it convinces many people, and it's convincing quite a few, it is part of this possible next coup attempt that we talked about on yesterday's program. Then, and this is the last clip that we'll look at, although if this is interesting, if you can stomach this, I encourage you to find the entire interview. It's available online. Trump then does his routine of stating states in which he did very well. He sort of stops short of saying, "I won these states," but they're states where we did well. And these are states Trump is looking at being involved in 2022. And so this is actually massively consequential. And we're going to talk about why in a moment. But first, let's look at the clip.
Better than most. But we won big numbers in Missouri. And you did mention Ohio, where we'll also be involved. But we have time. I mean, there won't be there won't be primaries for quite a while in all of those states. And we have sometime interesting things going on in this place that I love is Pennsylvania. You have a lot of very interesting candidates in Pennsylvania, too. So we're going to be involved in the process, yeah.
Okay. Mr. President, congratulations on the book, Our Journey Together. It's out tomorrow. It's available at 45books.com. As always, your time is greatly appreciated, and thank you for honoring us.
Well, thank you both very much, and keep up the good work. You're doing great. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
So why is this so important? It's important because this is the clearest signal yet from Trump that he will be involved in 2022 races. And he mentions Missouri. He mentions Pennsylvania. Maybe he's going to support Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. And he mentions some other states. Now, this is a signal from Trump about his intentions. The question that remains is whether the candidates want Donald Trump involved. But if he can raise money for them, I imagine they are certainly going to let him do it. And without a doubt, Trump's preference would be involved, endorse and campaign for people who win, and use those successes, if it happens, to justify running in 2024 and being the Republican nominee by saying, look at what I did for us in the midterms. That's his plan. He's making it very clear right now, and it very much might work. Now, on the other hand of things that might work versus might not work, we now are seeing almost daily installments in this confusing, bizarre, kind of aimless Republican civil war. But today we have a new wrinkle. The Republican civil war has mostly been anti-Trump Republicans and pro-Trump Republicans fighting each other. Like I said earlier this week, this is a civil war we want to encourage. It's a good thing for this to be going on. Yesterday's episode, we had Dan Crenshaw, sort of a fence rider, continuing to ride the fence and tread water in the midst of the Civil War, saying, the Freedom Caucus people who claim to be very pro-Trump, they didn't really vote with Trump that much, but people like Adam Kinzinger, who is seen as anti-Trump, actually did vote for Trump, Dan Crenshaw finding a way to ride the fence. That was yesterday. Today, there's a new wrinkle. And now it is just straight up Trumpist on Trumpist Civil War. Today, we have Trumpian lawyer Lynn Wood, that's the same guy who briefly represented Kyle Rittenhouse, and that's relevant. Lynn Wood is also the guy who was involved in all sorts of 2020 election hijinks. That very same Lynn Wood, Trumpian lawyer, attacking brutally Trumpian Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. Even within the pro-Trump wing of the Republican Party, there is now trouble in paradise, and we should encourage this. We should foment this. Lynn Wood is now accusing Marjorie Taylor Greene of being under the influence of, not alcohol, of the devil. After Kyle Rittenhouse claimed that Lynn Wood exploited him to make money, Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted, quote, "Lynn should go to jail for what he did to Kyle. I also fully blame him for why Georgia lost our Senate seats. He's from Georgia. And we know him as a lifelong Democrat, not a Republican. He grifted off of Trump and told people not to vote on January 5th, saying their vote would be stolen." Lynn Wood has now gone to the Daily Beast and said he's thinking about suing Marjorie Taylor Greene for defamation, suing Fox News propagandist Tucker Carlson for defamation. And he responded to this by saying, quote, "I mean, from a biblical perspective, I think she's under the influence of the devil because people that follow Jesus Christ don't lie. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a liar. Draw your own conclusions." Lynn Wood also told the Daily Beast Greene was one of a number of deep state right-wing agents working to destroy his credibility. Not a surprise there. So when the lunatic extremists are fighting each other, you know that all is not well in their world. And I take two interests in this. One, you already know, this type of infighting can only be good for the left. It might not help the left, but it might. And it certainly doesn't help the pro-Trump right if the left knows how to take advantage of it. But the more interesting piece is that this is yet another data point that what unites these people fundamentally is not actually even support for Donald Trump. there was one layer, which was, these are all Republicans and what unites them is conservative values. No, the pro-Trump Republicans had completely different values. It's just Trump says I'm a Republican, so they vote for Republicans. Fine. So that we were done with. Well, maybe it's support for Trump that actually unites them. No. Lynn Wood and Marjorie Taylor Greene both claim to love Trump. They both support Trump. They both say Trump is great. Lynn Wood claims Trump actually won the election. Marjorie Taylor Greene claims Trump actually won the election. Lynn Wood wants to take the election back however they can. Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to take the election back however they can. Both believe Kyle Rittenhouse acted in self-defense. You get the point. But as soon as there's anything but complete deference to each other personally, they go to war. The deep state this, the devil that, you're subject to this. Even the very Trumpism that supposedly unites them is not enough to go beyond the personal for these folks. It's a complete and total grift. And the question is whether the left will figure out how to take advantage of it and actually win some elections. Unfortunately, I remain very skeptical that the left actually knows what to do with this. We'll talk about what the left could do with this on an upcoming show. If you have ideas, certainly let me know. I have some, but always interested in hearing from you. Hey, this is really funny. We have a voicemail number. The number is 219-2-DAVID-P. The other day on one of my live streams, one of our viewers pointed out, you know, Omicron can be has an anagram, which is moronic. I don't know what the meaning of that was, but the guy, Eric from Mass, who told me that, wanted it to mean that we just shouldn't even pay attention to Omicron. Fine. Today's caller found an even more pernicious anagram. Take a listen to this.
David, sir, this is Corey from Indianapolis.
Yes.
I saw on your live stream last week, I think it was a super chat, mentioned that Omicron is an anagram for moronic.
It's Omicron, not Omicron, but yes.
I realized something far more sinister, which is that the word Delta Omicron is an anagram for media control.
Right.
So I think this might go a little deeper than we previously thought.
Yes, and I checked it out for myself. It's Delta Omicron, not Delta Omicron, but it is a perfect anagram for media control. What it actually means, I couldn't tell you, but at least conceptually, some very suspicious stuff going on. We have a great bonus show for you today. Become a member, folks. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Become a member, and you'll get instant access.
WRCT. In sound from way out.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beat.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot?
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
For those of you.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
There is only one legitimate option now, which is that the case is closed and that Julian is immediately released.
A British court has ruled in favor of the U.S. government's appeal to extradite WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to face criminal charges in the United States. Supporters warn his extradition would be a major blow to press freedom worldwide. We'll get an update and look at what's next. Then two journalists accept the Nobel Peace Prize today, Russian reporter Dmitry Muratov and Filipina journalist Maria Ressa.
I stand before you, a representative of every journalist around the world who is forced to sacrifice so much to hold the line, to stay true to our values and mission, to bring you the truth and hold power to account.
Then, The Forever Prisoner, a new film by Alex Gibney, tells the story of how the U.S. treatment of Guantanamo prisoners may amount to war crimes, especially in the case of Abu Zubaydah.
In 2002, FBI and CIA agents thought they had nabbed a diabolical Al-Qaeda mastermind. Abu Zubaydah has never been charged with a crime. He was imprisoned in the secret CIA unit called Strawberry Fields. As in, forever.
All that and more, coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A British court has ruled in favor of the U.S. government's appeal to extradite WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to face criminal charges in the United States. A London district judge had previously ruled Assange should not be extradited because he would likely die by suicide in a U.S. prison. UK Judge Timothy Holroyd said he was satisfied with a pledge from the United States that Assange would not be held in a maximum security prison in Colorado. Outside the court, supporters rallied for Assange's release, warning his extradition would be a major blow to press freedom worldwide. We'll have the latest on Assange's case after headlines, speaking with one of his lawyers as well as his brother. This comes 2 days after Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed the White House's virtual summit for democracy, where he announced U.S. efforts to support independent journalism and reporters targeted for their work. On Thursday, President Joe Biden welcomed Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido to the Democracy Summit rather than Venezuela's democratically elected president, Nicolás Maduro.
Estamos convencidos de que podemos salvar a la democracia.
We are convinced that we can save democracy and therefore save Venezuela, something that the bad guys are winning, but I think it is exactly the opposite.
The Biden administration continues to recognize Guaido as Venezuela's leader. That's despite his involvement in a failed coup attempt in 2019, his failed bid in 2020 to storm parliament with a group of lawmakers in order to forcefully swear himself in as Venezuela's leader. Guaido was also linked to a failed coup plot in 2020 led by Venezuelan dissidents and American mercenary company. A federal appeals court has rejected former President Trump's attempts to keep White House documents secret from the House committee investigating the January 6 assault on the Capitol by a pro-Trump mob. The ruling sets up an emergency review at the Supreme Court.